From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, with the primaries less than a week away in New York, we'll take a look at single-payer health care as an issue in the governor's race. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on a major endorsement for Governor Cuomo this week, and New York's junior U.S. senator wants the state's dairy industry to be protected in any NAFTA renegotiation with Canada. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Single-payer health care for New Yorkers has become an issue in the race for governor. Democratic primary challenger Cynthia Nixon says if she's elected, she'd enact single-payer for New York. Not all of her opponents think that's a good idea. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Nixon wants New York to adopt a health care system that would bypass insurance companies and expand existing government-funded health care for seniors to all New Yorkers. She spoke recently to supporters in Albany.
We can have a New York with a single-payer Medicare for All system.
In a video released by her campaign, she says her mother's ordeal with breast cancer when Nixon was a teenager helped shape her views.
My mother found a lump in her breast that she rightly suspected was cancerous. She was unemployed. She had no health insurance. She went out and got the first job she could find that offered health coverage, and then she waited a month because she was afraid that if she got it checked out right away, the health insurance company would say it was a pre-existing condition and would refuse to pay for her treatment.
Nixon says her mother had to feign surprise when the doctor discovered the lump. Her mom received treatment and recovered. The single-payer measure, known as the New York Health Act, has been approved several times in the state assembly, but it stalled in the Senate. Nixon blames her opponent in the Democratic primary for governor, incumbent Andrew Cuomo, for the bill's failure. Cuomo, until this past spring, backed a group of breakaway Democrats in the state Senate. They helped Republicans keep control of the chamber. The RAND Corporation released a cost analysis study of the New York health plan and found that it would lower costs for patients and providers and would save the health care system in the state $15 billion over the next 12 years. But it would require nearly $140 billion in new tax revenue over the next 4 years. That would make up for the loss of health insurance premiums and co-pays to the health care system. That's 1.5 times more than the state currently collects in revenue. It would also require the Trump administration to grant a waiver to New York to set up the plan. Governor Cuomo has expressed support in the past for the idea of a single-payer system, but after the RAND study was released, Cuomo expressed concerns about the potential cost of the program, but he says he'll discuss it with the legislature. Lately, the governor's been taking steps to preserve protections established under the Federal Affordable Care Act into New York law. He spoke before a gathering of health care workers, where he announced that his administration rejected rate hikes requested by health insurance companies who provide insurance through the state's exchange.
We are going to do it by codifying the Affordable Care Act in New York state law and New York state regulations. We have already started. We banned insurance companies from discriminating against people with pre-existing illnesses, so that's done.
The ACA has been largely successful in New York. The state's health care exchange provides insurance for 1/5 of New Yorkers, and since it began, the rate of uninsured New Yorkers has been cut in half, from 10% to 5%, according to numbers from the state health department. Whichever candidate wins the Democratic primary in September, they will face Republican Mark Molinaro in the November elections. Molinaro, concerned about the costs of enacting single-payer health care, says if the legislature were to pass the plan, he'd veto it.
New Yorkers cannot afford a $92 billion additional tax and have a government-run health care where choices are limited, eliminated, where private insurers are no longer allowed. They've made clear this, not to mention the state of New York and the governor can't run the subway system in the city. I don't think it's safe or fair to anyone to put the state of New York in charge of health care.
Molinaro says he'll release his own health care plan later in the campaign. He says he backs access to quality health insurance and health care, but he says that system has to include choice and competition. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, well, New York Times editorializing on Albany. The headline, Albany is a mess, grab a broom. They give some points for fixing Albany that they address to the governor and legislature, including but not limited to tightening campaign finance laws, Alan, giving lawmakers a raise and banning outside income and creating a truly independent ethics body.
I guess we've never heard any of that before. Not much. Not from me. Look, the Times supports a governor when they shouldn't be. This is a time for guts. He's surrounded by corruption, and yet they make the assessment he's going to win. Maybe we should be there. They are telling him what they know he is not going to do. Because he was going to do it. He came into town on a white horse and said, I'm going to fix Albany, I'm going to clean it up, and has done anything but that. Joe Prococo, all of the other guys, these are Elaine Calieros. These are people who have been convicted very close to him. And yet we give him a free pass. His name is Cuomo. It's immensely helpful to him, especially in New York City, where people don't always follow state politics. But there are moments, David, when people like the New York Times have to have the same kind of guts they're showing in publishing this editorial. We've been talking about this unsigned editorial. They have to have the same guts not to support a governor in a situation like this who is so surrounded by corruption.
Let's stick with what you referenced, which was the New York Times endorsement of Governor Cuomo this week, followed by that editorial on Albany being a mess. They said in their endorsement that he has the qualities to fight a guy like President Trump.
Well, of course, the New York Times is embattled. We know that. And they are making a decision. But, you know, you fight fire with fire and somebody's going to get burned somewhere along the line. David, I can't reiterate enough that we know that this particular governor made a pledge, and the pledge was to clean up Albany. He hasn't done that. Far from it, there are those who would argue this is the most corrupt administration we have ever seen, pay to play. You want to get something, you give a huge amount of money to an administration and office. This is the time for guts. The Times had guts to put an unsigned editorial in their paper. I got to admire that. But on the other hand, this is not a time that you say, okay, because this guy is a tough guy, even though we don't like a lot of the things he's doing, we're going to go along with him and endorse him. No, at least keep your mouth shut.
And what about their idea, Alan? You've talked about these things before of giving lawmakers a raise and banning their outside income, essentially making them full-time.
David, if we went out there and said to the people of New York State, who'd be willing to work for the salary that these guys are making, the hands would be going up all over the place. So you want to give them a little bit more money, fine, but they're not going to take it. The problem is these people are so entrenched. Not everybody, by no means are every one of them doing this, because there are some good people, but they still vote for the same leadership, which instills this thing. So, you know, they are guilty, too, even if they don't have outside jobs. But there are many who are making money on the outside. You know, David, the United States Congress adopted this law quite a while ago. You can't make money on the outside. Forget about it. And yet this legislature continues to do exactly that. It's not magic. We know what they're up to. They get the job, and now somebody has to decide whether to go to lawyer or insurance broker or real estate broker X, and they say, okay, I have a choice. Should I go to the state legislator and tell my friends, I've got the senator, I've got the best, or I've got the assemblyman, I've got the best, who has a lot of influence in the courts, and the judges are looking at them. Come on, we all know what the game is. Stop it.
Well, Alan, we're a week out as we sit here speaking today from the primary in New York, which, of course, takes place on Thursday, not Tuesday, which is September 11th, a different day this year. As you look into your political crystal ball, let's talk about that governor's race. He's got Cynthia Nixon, his primary challenger there. Your thoughts on, after what we've seen in some of these other primaries, the chances of someone like a Nixon actually beating Andrew Cuomo?
Well, there's always a chance. The problem is that the electorate, as I have said before, knows very little about New York state politics. Secondly, just in case, there might be an upset, make sure nobody comes out to vote. Change it from a Tuesday to a Thursday. Sure, you can hide behind religious holidays, you can say this or that, but the fact of the matter is primaries are badly attended in the first place. But as you have just referenced, we are seeing an awful lot of interesting things happening. People are voting because of who they are. You get a district, its demographics are clear. People are saying, okay, I'm going to do something which is unexpected. The pollsters have proven themselves to be really failures at this stage because they don't know who's coming out to vote. When we're seeing these upsets in Boston, in New York City, in Queens, in each of those places, it's because the pollsters only decide who prime voters are, and they turn out to be wrong. Here's a good rule of thumb. If you are running and your constituency thinks it can make a real change, they're going to come out and they're going to vote. We have a man named Williams who is running for lieutenant governor who may well beat Kathy Hochul, who is the governor's choice. And the governor knew it, which is why he tried to get Hochul to not run. And so what we have is a primary which is deeply flawed, which will be badly attended. And if you want my crystal ball, anything could happen, including an awful lot of people voting against this governor. And I think he knows it. I think he's worried about it. And I think he's spending a lot of the money that he's collected via his campaign tactics. He's worried about it. And there's always a chance that there'll be an upset.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The New York State Association of Counties and two other groups are urging the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the State Department of Health to act on setting contaminant levels for chemicals that have been found in drinking water. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
The New York State Association of Counties, or NYSAC, along with the county health officials of New York and the New York State Conference of Environmental Health Directors, are urging the agencies to set maximum contaminant levels, or MCLs, for such chemicals as PFOA and PFOS. Stephen Aquario is NYSAC Executive Director.
It's an issue that's going to be around here for a while, and the state of New York and the federal government need to act now so that local governments can be part of the testing, part of the monitoring, and help again maintain the integrity and the security and the safety of our drinking water.
He says if the EPA will not set an MCL, then the state should take up the charge. The EPA has a health advisory of 70 parts per trillion for PFOA and PFOS in drinking water. In June, the Federal Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, or ATSDR, released a draft report recommending an MCL of 7 parts per trillion, saying that protecting America's drinking water is a top priority. An EPA spokeswoman says, quote, EPA is committed to evaluating PFOA and PFOS under the regulatory determination process using the best available science. As a part of the evaluation, EPA will be reviewing all newly available scientific information, including the ATSDR report. EPA is taking steps to accelerate the determination process before the existing statutory deadline, end quote. Aquario says more and more county leaders are speaking about the issue.
It's a growing issue of concern. I think that public officials, elected officials, are having a better appreciation about the consequences of this contaminant that's existing in our drinking water, in our surface water, especially around the Hudson Valley, off of Stewart Air Force Base.
Newburgh's main drinking water source was found to be contaminated with PFOS more than 2 years ago. And Aquario mentions the contamination in Suffolk County on Long Island, in Dutchess, and in Orange counties. And there is PFOA contamination in Hoosick Falls and Petersburg in Rensselaer County. Rich Crist is spokesman for Republican County Executive Steve McLaughlin.
You know, setting standards that are clear and easy to understand is a good step. And along with that, though, we also think that as you're setting the standards, We also think there should be a process and a path for remediation established by the federal government as well to deal with this situation.
NYSAC's Aquario says the state recognizes the PFAS chemicals as hazardous substances.
And what local government officials are wondering and questioning is, why hasn't the federal government classified PFOS, PFOA, and the family of chemicals tied to the PFAS chemical tree to a federal hazardous substance? And why that is important is because we could then begin to draw down on federal Superfund remediation funds. And together with state Superfund remediation funding, we can truly address properly water contamination in our state.
A State Department of Health spokeswoman says in part, quote, New York State remains focused on setting protective MCLs for PFOA and PFOS in drinking water in the absence of national standards, including a thorough review of the recent ATSDR report recommending minimum risk levels for PFAS, end quote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
New York's junior U.S. senator is calling for assurances that the state's dairy industry will be protected in any NAFTA renegotiation with Canada. In a conference call this week, Democrat Kirsten Gillibrand said the president should reject any plan with unfair quotas and tariffs or that prevents producers from selling milk products in Canada. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
Senator Gillibrand says the dairy industry is in a bind with low milk prices and ineffective farm insurance programs. In addition, she says retaliatory tariffs resulting from the trade war is making things worse. A member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, Gillibrand said in a conference call that there are two ways to protect dairy farmers from unfair trade practices. With renegotiations set to resume with Canada on Wednesday concerning the North American Free Trade Agreement, she wants the president to reject any deal that does not benefit U.S. dairy producers.
Many of New York's dairy farmers rely on the Canadian market in order to stay in business. But Canada has been unfairly subsidizing their own dairy industry for years, and New York's dairy products are essentially being blocked out of the market. The administration needs to make sure that in the new deal, Canada is no longer subsidizing their own dairy farmers and that they finally get rid of their quotas on American milk that can be imported into their country.
On Saturday, President Trump tweeted, quote, if we don't make a fair deal for the U.S. after decades of abuse, Canada will be out. Congress should not interfere with these negotiations or I will simply terminate NAFTA entirely, unquote. Gillibrand says her call to protect New York dairy is not interfering.
There's a lot of things that Canada has been doing to make it harder for our dairy farmers to sell their milk. And so the letter is very direct about the three or four things they could put into the negotiations to level the playing field. And I don't think they'd be seen as interference.
On July 24th, the Trump administration announced $12 billion in federal assistance for farmers adversely affected by tariffs. Gillibrand says dairy farmers are supposed to receive about $127 million of those funds.
While it's not enough to cover the harm that's been done by this trade war, every little bit counts when our farmers are struggling to pay their bills. Yet, there's been no clear explanation for how and when these payments will be issued. So today, I'm calling on the Secretary of Agriculture to immediately release those payments to our dairy farmers.
In late August, the New York Farm Bureau led a number of agricultural interests in calling for an end to tariffs and the trade war, which the organization says is causing economic hardship for family farms across the state. Associate Director of National Affairs Lauren Williams says continuing trade routes under NAFTA are critical.
Extremely brutal out there in the dairy industry. Farms are receiving less for their milk than what it costs to produce it. As we head into harvest season, commodity prices for corn and soybeans are down as well. So we want some good market stabilization. And I think if we get good trade agreements, that's helped put confidence not only in our producers, but the processors as well. So I think Canada and Mexico to get a good agreement is good for our farmers.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. In one of the most closely watched congressional races in the country, first-term Republican Congressman John Faso holds a slim lead now in New York's 19th congressional district, according to a new Siena College Spectrum poll. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
Faso leads Democrat Antonio Delgado by 5 points among likely voters in the Siena Research Institute poll. Siena's Steve Greenberg places that lead within a 4.8% margin of error.
Faso leads Delgado 45% to 40% among likely voters. There are still 14% of voters in the 19th congressional district who are undecided.
Greenberg says the poll shows Faso of Kinderhook has a real race on his hands.
Delgado is doing really well with Democrats. He has the support of 81% of Democrats. Faso almost as strong among Republicans. He has the support of 76%. And Faso has a small 6-point lead, 44% to 38%, among independent voters.
The poll did not factor in Green Party candidate Steve Greenfield. Greenberg notes that voters 55 and older are evenly divided between Faso and Delgado, while those under 55 are solidly behind Faso. Faso has a break-even favorability rating and is unknown to one-quarter of voters. Delgado has a 12-point net positive favorability rating but is unknown to 44% of voters.
Women, they're for Delgado by 9 points. Men are with Faso by 21 points. And when we look at it geographically, the Hudson Valley portion of the district, Ulster Duchess, Delgado has a 13-point lead. In the southern tier portion of the district, encompassing Broome, Delaware, Otsego, and Sullivan counties, Faso leads by 23 points. And in the more Capital Region area, Columbia, Greene, Montgomery, Rensselaer, and Schoharie counties, Faso has a 17-point lead, 53 to 36.
Both sides declined to discuss the poll but provided written statements. The Faso camp said, quote, after Democratic candidates collectively spent over $8 million in their primary falsely smearing Congressman Faso, we are very pleased with our lead in this race. Delgado's campaign says, quote, the incumbent here has only been able to secure a minor 5-point lead in a poll with a margin of error of 4.8%. And let's keep working. The statements in full are posted at WAMC.org. Again, Steve Greenberg.
How do voters in the 19th feel about the next Congress? Do they want to see the Congress that takes office in January be controlled by the Democrats or the Republicans? Well, just as these voters give John Faso a 5-point lead, by a 5-point margin, 48% to 43%, voters say they would like to see the Republicans keep control of the House.
WAMC political observer Dr. Alan Shartok says the elections are still up for grabs.
Right now, the pollsters with 5%, it sounds sort of right to me, are going to have to try to anticipate who's going to come out and vote, because polls don't mean a thing based on what the eventual outcome will be. You'd rather be 5 points ahead than 5 points behind, that's for sure. On the other hand, we saw Ocasio-Cortez in her district in her fight against Crowley reversing that poll by 50 points. Think about that, 50 percentage points. That's extraordinary. So anything can happen.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1836. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.